Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borag Thung, Earthlets, and Squawks Deck Thargo everywhere, and welcome to the latest episode of the 2000 AD Thrillcast. I am your host, Molchar. Bit of a bittersweet episode this week. We have some exciting news, but also some sad news. We'll start with the latter first. You may well have seen the other day that the veteran artist Ian Kennedy has passed away at the age of 89. Ian's work, how do you encompass 7 decades of just incredible artwork, not just for 2000 AD, Star-Lord, but also for Commando, for Wildcat, Eagle, the Picture Library series, so many incredible moments. And Ian is one of those artists whose work just speaks for itself, but is reflected in a personality which was warm and generous and kind and humble. And we have 3 people who knew him both professionally and personally. Philip Vaughan from the University of Abate, Martha Julian from the Thought Bubble Convention, and Mark Seddon, who was the person who helped Ian with all his social media. We got them on to talk about Ian, both as an artist and as a man. And it was a really touching chat where they relate their memories of somebody who will be very much missed. Moving on to slightly happier tidings, you may well see the news this week that the 45th anniversary of 2000 AD is to be celebrated in an online convention at the end of March, last weekend in March to be precise. The Galaxy's Greatest 2000 AD at 45 is a streaming online show. Lots of panels with creators and celebrities. All of this brought to you streaming on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook, he said. Touch wood. But just the initial guest list, and we've got so many more guests to announce as we confirm them. You know, we've got John Wagner, Garth Ennis, Sean Phillips, John McRae, Anna Morozova, Dan Cormor, so many great creators. But then also we've got celebrity fans of 2000 AD, including Robin Ince, Mitch Benn, Desiree Birch, Adam Rutherford. Just, it's fantastic. So go along to 2000AD.com and have a look at the little lineup that we have announced with the news about the convention. So it's all online. Can watch for free. We're going to be announcing new merch during the course of it. There's also one or two other little fun bits and bobs that we have lined up. Over the coming weeks, there will be more and more news about guests and the full lineup. So exciting times. But happy birthday to 2000 AD. Those of you who are listening to this episode when it goes out, our official birthday is this coming Saturday, the 19th, 7 days before the cover date of the first issue. So we're going to be doing lots of fun stuff online, competitions, giveaways, and just reminiscences about 4.5 decades of 2000 AD. We'd love to have put on a physical show, but, you know, there's a pandemic and everything. So, make sure you get that in your diaries, 26th, 27th of March for the show. 19th of February for our birthday celebrations online. And looking forward to it. So that's all the happy stuff out of the way. Don't forget that we've got a huge sale on progs, both digital and physical. We've got a humble bundle coming out this week, which features not just some 2000 AD work, but stuff from the masses of British comic. So much, oh my word. Whew. There's a lot going on. So, what better way to celebrate 45 years of the Galaxy's Greatest Comic? We'll move on now to our chat with Martha, Philip, and Mark. As I said, it's a sad time to look back on Ian's life and his work, and just most importantly, celebrate incredible man and an incredible career. So it's wonderful, if somewhat bittersweet, to welcome three people who knew Ian, not just professionally, but also personally. We start off with Martha Julian from Thought Bubble, the Thought Bubble Convention. We've got Philip Vaughan from the University of Abate, and we've got Mark Seddon, who ran Ian's social media. Welcome, all three of you. Like I said, it's a bittersweet moment because we're here to celebrate Ian's life and work, and unfortunately he's not there to appreciate and probably be quite embarrassed by our words of praise. Mark, I want to start off with you, because I over the course of this chat I want to get not just a sense of Ian's incredible career. I mean, this was a career that spans 70 years, but also him as a person, and why it's been clear with all the tributes that he's touched so many people over that time. Do you want to give us a sense of the guy and how you came to be working with him and clearly a fan? I mean, you've got stuff right behind you there on the video.
Yes. Yeah, so I sort of, I guess, came to Ian relatively, I guess, late, that I didn't necessarily grow up reading Dan Dare, but it was sort of in later years, I guess, as a result of things like Thought Bubble, where sort of became more aware of his enormous career and his you know, huge talent, and impressively you know, huge talent even into his 80s. I sort of first encountered him really at Thought Bubble in person, and just, you know, being bowled away by you know, the wares that he was showing on his table, and just, you know, astonished really by the quality of the work. And then sort of from there, sort of finding a bit more about, you know, the sheer depth of his career. And I'd been helping Cam Kennedy with his art, which is a story in itself, but sort of it was born out of me just wanting to buy something from him, and in the process sort of unpicking his entire collection to work out what there was available. And because of that sort of successful relationship with Cam, recommended to his honorary brother Ian that I help him sort of with sort of really the organization of his sort of commissions and social media presence and all of that kind of stuff, to, you know, just free him up to focus on doing the stuff that he loves and is so amazing at. So so I've just been working with him really over the last few years, sort of building up his website and his social media presence, and helping with his sort of pipeline of commissions, and really through that, just having almost daily contact with him, working through, you know, what he wants to be working on for the commissions, and being the first one to see the kind of work in progress as it develops, and really as sort of just being so close to him through that process, and seeing that art come to life, and being the, you know, the first set of eyes outside of his own house on it. I just felt, yeah, enormously privileged and so in awe really of his talent. And there's just been, you know, some, you know, really sort of fantastic moments through that. And it's just what has wowed me really has been his sort of just amazing sort of discipline and in terms of his work ethic, really, that you know, he calls himself retired, but I think still works probably harder and produces more output than many of his I'd say contemporaries, but many of the colleagues in the industry. And and always just so modest with it as well. It sort of, he's such a humble guy, but sort of producing these sort of, you know, amazing pieces of work.
I mean, it's something that we said in our tribute to him, that, you know, the stuff that he was producing covers for Rebellion, as you say, he was doing commissions. No drop off in quality. you know, still this incredibly rich palette, you know, it's so much detail. You kind of, I guess when somebody gets to that age, you'd forgive them if they cut corners a little bit, but Ian just seemed not interested in doing that at all.
Yeah, and even in the week before he passed, he literally just finished his last cover for a forthcoming sort of charity project. And you'd never guess looking at the cover that this was a guy anything other than at the height of his powers, really.
Philip, I want to come to you for a second because, you know, like I said, this was a career that spanned 7 decades. And there's so many facets to it, you know, not obviously there's 2000 AD stuff, the sci-fi stuff that was later in his career. But he has a lifelong connection to war comics, you know, producing it's something ridiculous like 1,200, 1,600 covers for Commando, the DC Thompson title. I just wanted to get a sense of the scale and scope of that career.
Yeah, well, it was huge. I think probably going to be unparalleled, I feel, to have that sustained kind of commitment and work ethic, like Mark said. And being brought up in Dundee, you know, he was always on my radar. I think the first time I ever came across his name was actually in the New Eagle in the editorial in issue 19, I think it was, when David Hunt said that the new Dan Dare artist was from Dundee. And being a 10-year-old growing up in Dundee, I couldn't believe that someone in the same city as me was drawing something I was reading. And the weird thing is I had this weird kind of dream in my mind. I said, I'd love to see his studio one day. But I thought, that's never going to happen. And fast forward 30 years, I was very lucky enough to not only see his studio, but to become great friends with him. But it was actually through Commando that I first connected with him, because around about 2011, when I was working at the University of Dundee, setting up a comics module, Callum Laird, who was the editor of Commando at the time, asked me if they could use our filming facilities, our green screen studio, to record an interview with himself, George Lowe, who was the previous editor, Ian and Scott Montgomery, who you know quite well, who's just done the 45th encyclopedia with you. And that was the first time I actually met him in real life. And I kid you not, I had to kind of hide my fanboy in me, you know, when I went out to meet him in the car park and took him in. And I remained professional throughout that shoot until the very end, when I whipped out my copy of New Eagle and said, please, can you sign this for me? You know, I exposed myself as a huge fan. And then I also kind of chanced my arm a bit at the end of that, because I asked him if he'd be willing to do a class for me, for my undergraduate comic students. And I was delighted when he said yes. And that kind of started an 11-year kind of relationship, not just with me, but with the university and our courses, all our courses that we ran there. So, yeah, and when he came in, he would often come in with Callum and George and Scott, and he'd bring in, you know, covers that they'd taken out of the archive at DC Thompson's and just put them out on the table. And even that small amount of that they'd just take out every year when they'd come in was astounding to see. You know what I mean? It's just a huge, huge body of work. And I was so glad a couple of years ago when the current editor, Gordon Tate, managed to produce an art of book based around his work.
So in terms of what makes Ian Kennedy's work so special, now recognisably Ian Kennedy, when you look at a cover, you say, well, I know exactly who that is. What are those qualities? Mark, what was your feelings on that?
I'd say it's a few things. That he's got, I guess, incredibly high standards set for himself, and he's regardless of what any editor or client is going to think, that he's going to want to achieve those standards. There's just a real, I guess, polish, a finishedness to it, a sort of slickness. And in terms of his color work, he sort of makes often color choices that, you know, wouldn't necessarily be the expected ones, but just make the image sort of pop and shine in ways that you wouldn't expect. And it's, yeah, it almost feels into some degree of sort of like, you know, there's these fantastical scenes. Someone's taken a photo of them and handed them to Ian and say, almost, you know, translate this into a picture, because of the believability behind the illustrations as well.
Well, that's something that really struck me with his, particularly with his sci-fi work. You know, that he understood how machines looked. He understood how people related to machines and the notion of scale. So when he talks in interview about, you know, being a young boy in Dundee and watching the warplanes go over during the Second World War, and that sparking this great love of planes and machine, you go, well, he got it. He you know, when he's designing the big kind of arc ship in Wildcat in the 1990s, it looks like it would work. You know, there's a solidity to it. Phil, there is that thread of war comics all the way through his career, as we mentioned. Do you think that is the reason why his style works so well, that he was so adaptable, that he'd spent so long drawing machines and people in so many different situations that actually it was second nature to him?
Yeah, he had an uncanny ability to look at a photograph, not actually a model. Some people would think he'd have models in front of him, but I never saw a model on his desk the whole time I knew him. He would have this amazing ability to look at two-dimensional drawings and make them three-dimensional on a page. I've never seen anything quite like it in all my years of teaching art at art college. And they, like you say, they were so believable. They looked like they could work. And I think that was the most important thing, especially when he went into the science fiction realm. So when he did the early work on Star-Lord and the Starblazer covers and Dan Dare and 2000 AD, obviously, the tech, I thought, was incredible. But not just that, I think he had a believability about the figure work as well and the characters. So he wasn't just a technical artist. I think he was an all-rounder. And I think some of the covers that he would do for the annuals for DC Thompson's were so diverse. You know, he could really draw and paint anything. You know, you put any brief in front of you and he wasn't daunted by it at all. You know, just a true professional in that sense, where, you know, he was brought up through a kind of studio system. When he first started at DC Thompson's, it was kind of like a schoolroom of you know, apprenticeship in-house for about 5 years, I think he told me, before he went freelance. And I think he was learning so much from his peers. You know, he was looking at other artists in there. He was copying. He wasn't afraid of copying other artists to learn and to inform his work. It's something that I think people are a bit scared of these days, of copying other art. And Ian would often say to my students, you know, don't be afraid of that. You know, obviously, eventually you'll develop your own style. And we're not talking about tracing work. We're talking about having an influence there, and the aviation work was definitely in there. And again, like you said, Michael, we're very near Lucas Airfield here, military airfield over in Fife. And Ian used to actually do the covers for the air show, which was on every year here. And I used to go to that as a kid. It was a huge event. And the work that Ian did on those covers, and also for the squadron itself, he was actually commissioned by, you know, some fighter pilots to paint their planes, you know, and he had some of these prints up in his house, which were astounding pieces of art. I would say they were art, and I think that's an important thing to say. You know, Ian was always a comic artist, but over the last 10 years or so, he said to me he only felt like he was a real artist within the last 10 years, because he suddenly felt he was appreciated and he was working on more commissioned work, and he was able to have a kind of freer hand and have a bit more one-to-one with whoever was commissioning the work.
It is remarkable that, you know, we had Ian, we had Ron Smith. You know, these were people who were touched by the Second World War. You know, Ron Smith flew Spitfires, you know, and it seems to have had a profound effect on them. But also it harks back to an age when, as you say, there were apprenticeships, when you weren't having to come straight out of school or straight out of art college and suddenly become a freelancer and be expected to be able to sustain yourself. There, you know, there were jobs there. Anyway, I love that anecdote. I mean, he told it quite often that one of his first jobs was inking in the black squares in the crossword in the Daily Post. You know, it is just it's that kind of thing that anyone who understands the workmanship of comic book art will appreciate that actually learning how to ink within very precise square lines is actually quite a skill to have. You know, it's not like a child's colouring in book. But Martha, I want to come to you now because one of the things I really wanted to do with this episode is get a sense of the man. And, you know, he was, I think he was a guest of honour, four times, five times?
Well, this would have been the fifth year, but obviously with COVID, there was a kind of missed Corey in a bit. But yeah, this would have been year five.
I mean, Mark's already used the word humble to describe Ian. What was your experience of getting to know him, particularly through the convention appearances at Thought Bubble?
Well, we chatted a lot via email first, and you immediately, these guys will have heard from him via email. He used a lot of inverted commas in a lot of funny places, and it was just an incredible gentleman. It just came out. I don't think I've ever met anybody that was just this kind and this gentlemanly and so, so sweet. And everybody at the show, just every single person who met him would come dashing over to me, knowing that I'd been chatting to him via email and stuff. And just absolutely effusing about how wonderful his personality was and how warm he is and funny. And whenever he would message me after, there'd be like this raft of people that I would have to forward things on to, people who he was thanking and people who he was mentioning that he'd seen at the show, that I would then have to forward all these messages on because he had such sweet things to say about people.
Thoughtball, for a long time, has for me been a convention that has always looked to the future. You know, about fostering new talent and new creators and new comics. But there's also that strand of you know, the legendary people, the inviting people who have been working in the industry a long time. And I always got the sense, and I don't know if you felt this as well, that Ian's presence at the show felt like a real anchor. You know, that he was a connection between, as you said, the industry of old and actually this industry of you know, incredible change and diversity. Do you think he got a sense of that as well?
Absolutely he did. And he, you know, it's strange to think, he was completely blindsided and completely touched that we would want him as a guest of honour. You know, he couldn't believe it. Like we were saying about him being so humble, he didn't think he was undeserving. I just don't think he could quite believe that we wanted him to have this role and that we wanted to celebrate him. And absolutely, he was completely getting a sense of having this kind of buzz around him and, you know, and getting a sense of other people coming up within the industry was definitely super exciting for him.
So I know when he did interviews and I think there was a panel that we ran as a from the drawing board that he did like a live draw. It was possibly at Dundee. And what always struck me about him was just, as you said, how kind and gentle he was. And he just, you know, there was never necessarily any edge to what he was saying. He was just explaining things quite happily, chatting away, you know, and Mark, you were right. The word humility was absolutely the quality that he displayed, not just about himself and his work, but also in regards to other people as well. You know, that he, you never got the sense that there was any arrogance or you know, sense that he was more important than he was. But the one thing that I did want to ask is that, as we said in our tribute, you know, he started and had most of his career through an age when artists received no credit for their work. You know, it was taboo, particularly at DC Thompson, where they didn't necessarily want anybody to be, same at IPC, didn't necessarily want anybody to be poaching their artists. So it must have been quite something for him to come, you know, to later in life and realize, actually, my work has had this significant impact on people. Phil, did you get a sense from him that was his reaction?
Yeah, I mean, he really did not believe that this fan base was out there. And I had to really twist his arm to first of all, he came to a comic con, more of a comic convention in an academic sense that we did at the university in 2011, where we gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award, probably too early, I think, because of what he achieved after that. But we also gave Cam Kennedy an award at that exact same event. And I think one of my defining moments in my career was actually introducing Cam and Ian for the first time at that convention. They'd never met each other before. And I was sitting beside Cam and I told Ian to come in after the con because we were going to do this presentation. And someone snapped a picture, I think it was Jeremy Briggs, snapped a picture of us, of me introducing the two. And my face is just kind of beaming, you know. It's just like one of those moments because they became such good friends, you know. And then after that, he kind of got the bug. So he actually never went to his first Comic Con. I think he was 82 when we went down together to one in Birmingham, run by Steve Tanner, I think it was at the time. And that was the first one he'd been to out with Scotland. And he absolutely loved it. He was made to feel so welcome, not just from the organisers, not just from the fans, but from other comic creators. The amount of comic creators that I was kind of in awe of coming up to the table and saying, oh my God, I love your work. Can't believe you're here. Can you sign this? This is comic creators, not the fans, you know, big, big names. So he really got the bug and it opened his eyes to this scene, to the point where I felt like he was a permanent fixture as the years went on. Certainly any event I went to in Scotland and in England as well. And he certainly really enjoyed the bubble, as he called it, Thought Bubble, along with the one that Paul Trimble runs in Ireland as well. Those were the two ones that he always looked forward to. But he enjoyed them all. And he really enjoyed meeting the people, talking to the people, and going around to other exhibitors and, you know, and chatting to them before the show opened and socializing with us all as well, you know, into the small hours sometimes, you know. He was better at doing that than I was sometimes. So, you know, I mean, he really, really embraced that convention circuit. And I just thought it was fantastic to see, you know. We had some amazing journeys together on the train down from Dundee. And eventually his son, Neil, would join him, especially at Thought Bubble, because that was like the midway point. And Neil got so much out of seeing his dad so appreciated, you know, at these events and conventions. And he became kind of, you know, a key member of the team and met a lot of people, you know. And, you know, I thought that was fantastic as well.
I've always got a sense, particularly at Thought Bubble, of just his appreciation, as we've said, of comics, of other creators, of people being enthusiastic about the thing that he devoted his life to. I mean, you're absolutely right. For, you know, I've been in the odd pub, and Ian's walked in, and I'm like I'm knackered. It's 10 o'clock at night and I'm knackered and I want to go to bed. And an 80-year-old man's just walked to the room. Ah, damn it. Not that I need much encouragement to keep going. But Martha, I mean, that was just, as we say, it was just the joy and the energy of him, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Am I allowed to say that he was also a bit of a flirt?
Absolutely.
Yeah, just super, super cheeky and really, really, really just brilliant fun to be around. I always sought him out. He got to meet my little girl, Gloria, when we did the marquees in Leeds, even though I was, I think I had her about a month before. And I just thought, I want this little baby to meet Ian Kennedy. So off we went. Yeah. Yeah, just a wonderful man.
Mark, I want to come back to you to talk a little bit about whether this personality was something that actually was expressed in his work, because even the later stuff, so full of energy, so full of innocence isn't the right word, but a kind of, I don't know, like a clarity to it, that he understood not just how things physically worked, but the emotion behind them as well. Did you ever get a sense of that?
Yeah, I mean, I was just on the previous point, I was just thinking about when we were at Thought Bubble together last, and I was sort of looking at, we'd just been out for a meal and heading back to the hotel, and I had a bit of a drive to get to my hotel. I was like, well, it's late, I'm gonna, you know, head back, and Ian is popping off to the disco. But sorry, to your actual question, yeah, there's a sort of a sense of, I think, goodness in his images. You know, they're sort of an absence of almost like, you know, malice or, you know, darkness. That it's a sort of a sort of harkening back to kind of the almost a simpler time of the clean cut heroes, I guess, with the square jaws and so on. So I guess that sense of goodness that's innate within Ian, I guess that comes across in some way through his images.
He would often say to me, though, that latterly Judge Dredd was his favourite character to draw, which I thought was, you know, when he actually drew Dredd back in the 80s, he said he didn't quite resonate with the character because he was so dark and edgy. And again, it was great that meal that Mark is on about, that was, you know, John Wagner invited us out to that meal that last time. And, you know, he became very good friends with John as well. And he really, really loved drawing the judge, I guess, as he'd call him, in commissions. And he told me that became his favourite character to draw. And he was very much in respect of Carlos's design as well. And unfortunately, never got the chance to meet Carlos, but I do believe he developed a friendship with Sandra Esquera on through Facebook. And that's the other thing, through Facebook was his adopted sort of social media platform. And some of the stuff we post on there was absolutely fantastic. You know, he'd give us all kind of a bit of a hard time sometimes, you know, and he was very kind of outspoken in a good way, you know, in a good way.
I mean, goodness is entirely the right word. You know, you behind you, Mike, you know, you've got some Dan Dare artwork there by Ian. And his stuff really did hark back to that kind of Frank Hampson world of, as you say, you know, square-jawed heroes. But that colour palette, or it was always so bright. It always reminded me a little bit of Colin McNeill's work in the late 80s and early 90s. You know, vivid, strong, highly saturated colour, but always blue skies. You know, blue skies and sunshine, even when it was a spaceship crashing into a tower block in Robusters. There you go. Exactly. You know, a lovely sunny day for a bit of action. Is that Action Force or Mask?
That is a Action Force / G.I. Joe, which is the one. It's the commission that I sort of allowed myself the luxury of getting into two for me.
Brilliant. Brilliant. What I wanted to move on to was a sense of Ian's legacy. Because, you know, as we said, many artists of his generation laboured for decades and got no recognition, didn't live long enough to see comics become what it is today in terms of, you know, appreciation and fandom and all this, that and the other. But I want to get a sense of Ian's artistic legacy and also his personal legacy. The obvious one is, you know, Did he influence people? You know, can we see the effect of his work in artists of today?
I would say definitely yes. Like I said, my experience of the Comic Cons of these amazing artists that I grew up with coming up to Ian. I mean, I remember. And I name drop here, but we had Dave Gibbons up to give a we were giving him an honorary degree. And so I invited Ian along because I knew Dave Gibbons was a fan of Ian. And again, I was lucky enough to introduce him a little exhibition we were doing there. And Dave was like, Dave became a bit of a fanboy. I don't think he'll mind me saying that, you know. So, yeah, he influenced the professionals. But for me personally, he influenced me. I would never got into art in the same way. I was copying his work when I was a kid to a lesser extent, obviously. But he really influenced me. And I was in a privileged position at the art college to be there when he was able to influence my students, the new generation coming through, who were all mostly digital artists. And Ian tried, you know, to go digital. He had to go when he was in with our students, but there was just no point because you could never replicate that, the line work and the color, especially on the computer, no matter how hard you try, you know. So the students absolutely love to see the original artwork, the original process, and they couldn't believe the body of work. I put up slides of his work, and they were just completely inspired. And we're talking about 10 years worth of students. I ran that module for 10 years. And I could see the influence. I could see the color palettes changing slightly. I could see some more people adopting traditional, you know, line art and drawing with a pen. And, you know, and that was so good to see from a personal and professional point of view. He had a huge, huge influence. And I don't think it could be ever underestimated.
I remember from that last thought bubble, Charlie Adlard came up to the table having purchased the Art of Ian Kennedy hardcover and took a photo with Ian with a great big smile across his face, and that was a lovely little moment. But yeah, we've sort of seen from the tributes that you know, many people sort of reaching out and sort of saying how much they admired Ian's work, and even if it is necessarily a direct, I guess, stylistical impact on a style of someone's individual art, you know I don't think anyone who's been close to the you know UK comics scene can't help but be influenced in some way, and sort of with Ian's modesty as well, sort of watching those videos of him describing his technique and being so understated about how he paints, colours in, what he might describe it as. But it's like using the acrylics, and he'll just very modestly say, oh, it sort of just waters them down and build up the layers. And even I sort of be looking at a video like that and thinking, in the way that he's describing, you're thinking, yeah, I could do that, maybe. I could, you know, why not? Of course I couldn't, but he's so modest with it that he could, certainly very easily inspire someone to pick up a paintbrush.
That's one of one of the signs of a great artist is not only that they are great in their work, but also that they are keen to share and to inspire. That it's not this kind of arcane, I mean, it is magical, but, you know, it's not this kind of arcane magical knowledge that they want to keep to themselves, but they want to inspire love of art and love of comics. I mean, Martha, we've talked a little bit about Ian at Thought Bubble. Do you think his presence there and the way he would be so open will have an ongoing legacy in terms of the show and the creators who attend it?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, undoubtedly. I have feeling that you'll still see his name all over the show this year. You know, we'll still be honouring him, and we'll be doing everything we can to make sure that people remember his work and remember his name. We'd be keen to do an exhibition. I'm sure we'll want a hand with that. And undoubtedly, I think there are a lot of people there who were deeply inspired by him.
Wonderful. I mean, like I said at the beginning of this, it is a bittersweet thing because you know, I'm guilty of this as much as anyone, that the tributes come after someone's gone. But I think one thing that struck me about an awful lot of the tributes is actually, and even the conversation we've had today, is that Ian knew
You know, it wasn't a mystery. It wasn't something that was only revealed after he'd passed. He was aware. And that knowledge, as we've said, was greeted with humility and love. I'm tearing up. So it's wonderful to be able to connect and just say, well, you know, he was such an important artist, sometimes quite, you know, unpraised and not necessarily as acknowledged as widely as he should have done, over the years. But it's wonderful that now we're able to say and to see that he had such an impact on people's lives, both professionally and personally. So thank you to all of you for sharing those memories. For those who haven't seen it, there is a pretty lengthy Thrillcast interview with Ian that was done at the beginning of the pandemic. Please ignore the blood that is pouring down his face during the course of it. This is exactly an example of exactly what we're talking about. You know, about half an hour before we were due to do the interview, he had a fall, and he injured the side of his head, and his wife sort of bandages it up. And after a little while, I went, are you bleeding? And he went, oh, yeah, I had a fall. Oh, it's absolutely fine. Let's just keep going. Okay, wonderful. You know, that was just the measure of it. Is that actually, it doesn't matter. This is a nice, you know, this is a nice conversation. So it's wonderful that we all have remembered. So thank you so much for sharing those memories of Ian Kennedy. Yes, Martha.
I was just going to say, people might also want to watch the documentary made by the wonderful Philip Vaughan that was made for Thought Bubble's digital comic convention a couple of years ago now, I guess that was. It's called It Does Not Have to Be a Bloody Masterpiece, all about the lovely Ian, and it's brilliant. And that's on Thought Bubble's YouTube.
And it was a pleasure to be asked to do that, Martha, I have to say, you know, because I know how much Ian wanted to come down, you know, and even wanted to come down last year. And again, it was great to get an insight into his. I tried to cover his whole career, but really he was only scratching the surface. That's all you could do.
Well, thank you to Martha, Philip, and Mark for that lovely chat. I hope you really got a sense of Ian as a person. It was tremendously warm and welcoming, and just, yeah, he's a real loss, but what an incredible life, what an incredible career. So thank you to them for bringing their reminiscences of Ian to the show. As I said at the beginning, so much going on over this week and the next coming weeks. Don't forget that also, you can go along to the Rebellion store, to our Printful store, and order a whole bunch of new T-shirts. What we've done to celebrate 45 years of 2000 AD, we've bought a load of designs back from the last two and a bit decades of Rebellion's tenure as the owners of 2000 AD, including this classic Strontium Dog T-shirts. There's loads in there. There's JoJo T-shirts, Chopper, ABC Warriors, Bad Company, Torquemada, Nemesis the Warlock. What's great about the Printful store, unfortunately, the normal 2000 AD web shop, those are T-shirts that are printed and exported from the UK. So unfortunately, our customers in Europe and North America, around the world, faced huge import charges and postal costs over the last couple of years, just because it's gone crazy. So the Printful store actually prints and fulfills in the regions where the orders come in. So if you're in North America, if you're in Europe, if you're in Australia, there are fulfillment centers that mean that you're not going to be absolutely gouged on the postage. So yeah. Fill your boots, Earthlets, with some classic 2000 AD tees. And there's plenty more on the way, along with lots of other merch. So like I said, keep an ear out on the 2000 AD online convention, 26th, 27th of March, where we're going to be talking about some more merch and other nice little things that are going to be coming up. So That's our episode. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time for more from the Galaxy's Greatest Podcast. I'm off to have a slow motion nervous breakdown. And until then, Earthlids, take care of yourselves, take care of one another, and Splendid Birthrick.
Alert! 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 Full power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Be 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the Galaxy's Greatest Comic at 2000adonline.com.